Welcome to the Ziglar Show. This is episode 440. In today's show, Ziglar CEO and Zig's son, Tom, joins me to interview a special guest. Our focus here is, as always, inspiring true performance. And our guest today does this in a fantastic way by addressing a primary area that we handicap ourselves as a culture and handicap our performance. And it's regarding our efforts for status. This will be an angle you've likely never heard before. So, hey, join us.
You're what you are and where you are because of what's gone into your mind. You can change what you are. You can change where you are by changing what goes into your mind. You cannot become what you need to be by remaining what you are. If you can't take a huge step to begin with, take as big a step as you can, but take it now. That's the key. Take it now.
You can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want.
Today's a brand new day, and it's yours.
Our show is brought to you today in part by HelloFresh, ultra-fresh ingredients that impressed even my foodie wife. New interesting recipes delivered right to your door. I'll tell you more in a bit, but you can get $35 off your first week of deliveries as a Ziglar listener. Visit HelloFresh.com and enter Ziglar when you subscribe.
I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky where horse racing and bourbon are famous and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of seven requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
Hey everyone, this is Kevin Miller, your honored host of The Ziglar Show. In today's show, we bring you Rachel Cruz. Her new book is titled Love Your Life, Not Theirs. She brings an angle on finances that's really intriguing as she blatantly puts on the table the issue of our pursuit of social status in comparison and what it does to our spending habits, our finances, and our debt and the things that chain us so dramatically. It's a big deal, folks. I highly encourage you to listen in as Tom and I dig in, and I really pushed in on these hard realities that we face. If you don't know Rachel, she's an incredibly seasoned communicator for her young age as a Ramsey personality and has been speaking to groups as large as 10,000 for more than a decade. She's the daughter of Dave Ramsey, who we've had on the show before. And she officially joined Ramsey Solutions in 2010. She uses the knowledge and experiences from growing up, as you can imagine, in the Ramsey household to educate others on the proper way to handle their money wisely and stay out of debt. As you'll hear in the show, she was really hit with this, you know, her normal as a kid of Dave Ramsey. And then she went off to college and realized, oh my gosh, everybody is suffering from the financial decisions and debt that they already have. And that's really what spurred her on this path. Again, you'll hear about that in a minute. But Rachel co-authored the number one New York Times best-selling book, Smart Money, Smart Kids, with her dad. This new book, however, Love Your Life, Not Theirs, it was just released in October 2016. So you can find Rachel on Twitter and Instagram at Rachel Cruz, that's C-R-U-Z-E, and her first name is R-A-C-H-E-L, so C-R-U-Z-E, and then online at her website, rachelcruz.com. YouTube, you can find her at Rachel Cruz as well, or on Facebook, she's Rachel Ramsey Cruz. So those are the places you can check her out. Of course, her book you can find anywhere, but really would inspire you to go to her website, rachelcruz.com. So we start off this interview with a bit of fun, but we get into the trenches of this significant issue. Again, folks, it really got me thinking in some different ways and just really looking at the plight that we are in as a culture and how much it does affect our spending habits, our debt, and then these things that then, as you'll hear Rachel talk about, they control us instead of us controlling them. So here I bring you Tom Ziegler, myself, and a great interview with Rachel Cruz. Well, hey, Rachel, this is an honor. And a quick story. I don't even know if you're aware of this. So I got married in 1993 and through Christ Church in Nashville, Tennessee, my wife, Terry, and I got to know your parents. And your dad, Dave, he was hosting just the fledgling Money Game radio show, selling his self-published financial peace book. He actually hired Terry to help him. So we kind of think she was the actual first employee of Dave Ramsey. And what that led into, of course, was him and your mom sometimes saying, hey, could you guys babysit a little bit? So we got to do that. And now here you are. What a great fruition to host you as the honored guest on The Ziegler Show today. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I do remember that. You guys were like the cool young couple that stayed with us when mom and dad were out of town. So well, it's fun to reconnect after all these years.
It is, though. I feel like the old guy. So I'm grateful Tom's a little older than old. I am. Okay.
Now thanks. I'm here for that.
Thank you. Thank you. Awesome.
Tom's got us covered.
Well, I wanted to start off just with that history there too. I mean, a primary message of Ziegler is legacy. And now you're part of this legacy of financial and life teaching and coaching. When did you realize that this was the path you were going to take?
Well, for a while, I feel like this, my role kind of just, it's kind of organically grown, if you will. So it wasn't this automatic, oh, this is exactly what I'm going to do. But looking back, you know, I was 15 years old and I remember someone from the company just said, hey, Rachel, if you got on stage during your dad's events and sold the kids' products, we could probably sell a lot because you're his kid and you could do like a fun sales pitch and all that. At the time, I mean, those events were running, you know, anywhere from 8,000 to 10,000 people. And I was like, there's no way I could get up there and do that. But sure enough, I did. And so I really grew a love for public speaking early on. And that was in high school, really my sophomore, junior year, senior year. I traveled around with dad on the weekends and that's what I did. That was my part-time job. And then when I went to college, I feel like my financial bubble popped, meaning that I feel like I kind of grew up in a financial bubble where this idea that if you don't have the money, you don't buy it. And money comes from work. Money doesn't come from mom and dad's back pocket. And these like very common sense principles of money were taught to me at an early age. And so really when I went to college, that bubble popped where I realized, wow, people have student loans. People are borrowing to go out to eat and to go on road trips. They have credit cards, you know, just this realization of, wow, this really is a need. And so my heart grew for the message, I think, more so in college, just realizing the need for it. And so when I graduated college is really when I stepped in and said, hey, I love public speaking. I love this message. Let me travel to colleges all over America, high schools, you know, high schools and do high school assemblies. And so I kind of went on the road. We didn't have a formal speakers bureau like we do now internally and the Ramsey personalities. None of that was there. It was just kind of me and a rental car that I had to pay extra for because I was only like 21 when I started doing it. I wasn't 25. So, you know, it was all that fun stuff. But yeah, it just kind of began. And so it's kind of organically grown to what it is today. And I think my message has evolved with, you know, my seasons of life, being married and having a kid and all of that. So all that to say, I feel like it just kind of organically happened. And I'm so thankful as I look back, I feel like God really did pave the way to what I'm doing now.
Well, and legacy, again, a big part of Ziegler, a big part of Tom's message. And so I don't miss the fact that the three of us are sitting here and in our own respective fashions, continuing the legacy given to us by our fathers. And so I want to dig into your story. But before we get real serious and press into it, I want to know, okay, we talk about spending. What is your personal guilty pleasure? And I say that though, I'm thinking, okay, you're probably gonna tell me I don't have guilt in it. Okay, but you get the point. What's the thing that Rachel, you know, likes to spend money on?
Oh gosh. Well, I'm like, I'm such a girl. So the lady listeners out there, you probably relate. I mean, clothes, of course I enjoy, but my big thing, again, you guys can't relate to this, but a manicure. Let's see.
Okay.
We can see each other right now. I know this is just audio for the listeners, but we can see each other, so you guys can see.
It's beautiful.
See the beautiful nails?
I do.
See you guys?
Tom, how about you?
My guilty pleasure?
Yeah. Or a manicure.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the next manicure I have will be the best one I've ever had because it'll be the first one that I've ever had.
Okay. Well, maybe you need to go to Nashville and Rachel will treat you.
I can take you out, Tom. Yeah.
I guess my guilty pleasure would just be spending a little too much money on sushi.
Oh, that's righteous.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Good thing.
That is.
Kevin, what's your guilty pleasure?
That one is probably top of the list, though. You know me, and I love good taste, and sushi's at the top there, and a good red wine is pretty divine as well. So I just got back from a wine tasting, and that was fun. That was fun. Well, Rachel, on your talking about college and going there, and as you have encountered, marriage now and baby, and of course you're Dave Ramsey's kid, so you've never made a mistake, right? And I wanted
all
to ask,
perfect.
Okay, well, just for context for people as we dig into this to know that you're a real person, I want to know what's the most regrettable financial decision you've had?
The blatant one in my mind, just as Dave Ramsey's kid in that context, I remember when I was 15, I bounced 3 checks at the mall. Yeah. So I had to go down to the bank and personally apologize to the branch bank manager for lying to him because I told him I had money in his bank to spend and I didn't. And that's a lie, according to my dad. So I did that. Wow. So that's the most wounding. I have to go to counseling for it. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so that was probably the most like blatant one. But I would say recently I'm the spender in our marriage. Winston is definitely the saver. And so I definitely, if someone's going to break the budget, it's me. And so I get to go to New York a lot for my job to do media and stuff. And they just have good, not crazy expensive shopping I do, but just, you know, some mid-level stores that we just don't have here in Nashville. Yeah. And so, yeah, there was one time last year I overspent and had to confess to the husband that when he looks at the bank account that I spent a little bit more than I should. And I knew I was doing it. That's why it's regrettable. I'm like, I don't need these. Like, these are complete wants. You know, it's just that moment of complete impulse. And I knew, I mean, in my brain what I was doing, but my heart just went on with it.
Okay. So you're a little bit real. Yeah, Tom.
So Rachel, I just want to ask you a question because, you know, I think our growing up experiences are probably similar in a lot of ways. I've been to so many events and we're closing down and it's late at night and the core fan base is kind of hanging around. And then you have that conversation that's just jaw dropping. You can't believe it. Somebody's life has been radically changed. Something happened to this person. It's usually at the side of an event when you're least expecting it. What's the most memorable story like that you've ever heard?
Oh, wow. I mean, I think, you know, being in this job, I feel like one of the best things I get to hear all of the amazing stories. But when it comes to people and their money, there's usually a lot of the big ones that stand out are, you know, sometimes the tragedies. And so just enter, you know, I was on a book tour all last month and went to, you know, 20 different cities and had different book signings. So I heard a lot of people's stories even just recently. And I heard 3 different times in 3 different cities, women talking about how their husbands had left, or there was one, her husband passed away just like 3 months ago, but he had life insurance. They were out of debt. And so she just looks at me with tears in her eyes, or even the 2 ladies that their husbands left them, you know, just say, Rachel, I'm going to be okay. As a woman, you know, I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing, but, you know, because of your message, like my husband and I got on the same page, we worked together. And then unfortunately, you know, when the marriage ended, either way, you know, by death or divorce, that they're able to be okay with, you know, and as a mom, my heart just reaches out for those kind of women. So I'm just like, oh, the fact that they're equipped for it. So you hear those that are just so, I mean, so impactful. And then the ones I just recently today, or no, I guess it wasn't today, 2 days ago, I was down at in our lobby where dad does the radio show. And this couple, 26 years old, paid off their house and everything for $142,000 debt free at 26. So you hear those and you're just like, oh my gosh, it's just crazy. It just gives you hope in America today. I feel like that people really do take ownership of their lives and they really do put these principles into place and they change their lives. And it's not me changing their life or my dad. it's these people, they take what we teach and they actually do the hard work and they do it. And so that's what's so awe-inspiring, is I feel like I hear these kind of stories from everyday people all the time, which I'm so thankful for, because those are the stories that motivate me. And I'm sure you too, you know, where you get to hear just amazing things that people are doing in their lives.
Absolutely. I get to speak all the time, and I speak on our Wheel of Life. And of course, one of our spokes on the wheel is financial. And what I say is that people get their financial life in order usually around one of the two D's. The first D is disaster, and the second D is a dream. Mm. And it is so much more fun to get your financial life in order when it's around a dream. Mm. And that's what I love about what you guys do. It's because whether somebody has a dream like being 26 and paying off the house and having their destiny in front of them in control, or it's a disaster, you've got the resources there to help them do it. So
I'm excited. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I'm excited to learn more about your book and what you're doing, because people ask me all the time, you know, they say, Tom, you know, we love what your dad said. We love you quote him all the time, but we like even more when you say your own stuff and give your own stories and everything else. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most in this interview.
Well, and that's incredibly what I appreciated in reading through the book, Rachel. But on what you said there, you know, in dealing with the tragedies stand out. I know that a primary statement from you is you want to help people control their money so it doesn't control them. So if we zero in, this is just a 10,000-foot view for everybody to understand, because I'm curious about this as well. If we zero in on the average American home, where do you see the most mismanagement and unintentionality with how we deal with our money taking its toll in the greatest fashion? I mean, what are the primary ravages of financial stress that you see affecting people in today's world?
Well, I think debt rises to the top. I mean, 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, according to the Wall Street Journal. And so we're a culture that we are up to our eyeballs in debt. I mean, the idea that the paycheck comes in and the paycheck goes right back out in payments. And so that's how so many people live. And I think that with debt specifically, I think it steals not only your income, but your sleep at night. I mean, your margin and your emotions. I mean, it steals so much from you when you owe someone something, that the joy of you going to work, because now your motivation to go to work is to pay bills. I mean, it changes so much of your relationship in life. So debt is probably one of the most, the things that affect people the most. But also, you know, looking at people that don't live intentionally. And I know, you know, Tom, a lot of your messages around this is being so intentional with your life and with people and their money. They're not. And this idea that people could look back and say, okay, the last 2 years I made X amount and I have no idea where it is. And that's normal. I mean, a lot of people live their lives like that. And so really trying to break that habit for people and saying, if you live intentionally, which is a budget, financially speaking, gosh, so many pains, so many marriage fights, so much lowers when you tell your money what to do. So I think the ravages really is debt, that portion, and then the idea that people just don't have control of their money. And the way to control it is a budget, but majority of people don't live on one.
Yep, I fall into that as well. The title of your book, Love Your Life, Not Theirs. I mean, this harkens to, and of course you make mention of the issue of keeping up with the Joneses. And so when I read that, I thought, you know, just about myself, I'm above that. I don't deal with that. And then a minute later, I realized that was a complete lie, that I do. How much of the way that I live is my wife and I used to say this, what would we choose to do? How would we choose to live? What would we have if there were nobody else to see it? It was us on a desert island. And of course it would be very different. But then the reality is that we don't live on a desert island. We do see people. So just how big of an issue do you really feel that societal pressure is on our spending behaviors?
I think it's huge. And I think, you know, the idea of keeping up with the Joneses 10, 15 years ago, you actually had to see them in person. Right. I mean, you had to be washing dishes and look out your window and be like, oh, well, they got a new car, or seeing them at church. I mean, wherever you are, you would see people and then you would feel that tension. But now we carry the Joneses around with us in our back pockets on our phones. And thanks to social media, I mean, they are everywhere. Everywhere you look, you see someone else, and people you don't even know, or people on the other side of the world. And so it's an amazing thing, because technology and social media, there is so much good in it. I think connecting with people that we never would be able to otherwise. So I think there's so many pros to it, but I think there are some cons, and something that we really do have to address, because the hard thing is that social media is everyone's highlight reel. It's the best part of everyone's life, and that's what you see. You know, you see the vacations, you see the new car, you see the redone kitchen. I mean, whatever it is, That's what you see. And if you think that you're trying to compare your life to that, you're comparing your life to make-believe. Because again, statistically speaking, people are struggling with money, and you don't see that. You don't see the credit card bill after the vacation. You don't see the possibly the second mortgage that was taken out on that home to redo that kitchen. And so you don't see the stress of people's money situations, and all you see is the best part. And so again, comparing yourself to that, you're comparing yourself to make-believe, because it's not the entire picture. And so we just have to be very, very careful, because what ends up happening is, and myself included, I'm just like you, I struggle with this. That's partly why I wrote the book, and could probably have so many personal stories, because it is hard, you know, when you're looking through Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and seeing what everyone else is doing. And it's like, oh gosh, you know, am I being a good enough mom? You know, my book, did it do that well? You know, you start comparing everything in your life. And what ends up happening is comparison not only steals your joy, but it steals your paycheck as well. Because you end up spending money, and some people money they don't have, to keep up a lifestyle that they think everyone else is living, and they're the ones missing out. And so it really does. It affects our money situation in a huge way. Also, because the whole comparison thing, it deals with our heart. You know, when we talk about money, a lot of people focus on the math or the interest rates, you know, or things like that. But looking at the heart of it and saying, you know, contentment and gratitude, like these kind of emotions are strong foundations for us to start on, to build upon good money habits. But for some people, that foundation is so shaky because comparison, it irks in our lives every single day. And a lot of people don't know how to take control of it.
Most of today, you will be indoors, likely your home or your office. I am as well. Even with my treks out into the woods, I spend a lot of time inside. And we're going to take about 20,000 breaths. According to the EPA, the indoor air is 2 to 5 times more polluted than the outdoor air, sometimes up to 100 times more polluted. At my studio, we have heat being forced through old ducts. I walk on carpet full of years of junk. No idea what's floating in the air that I'm taking constant gulps of. The solution is an air purifier, and Air Doctor is just the best. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants and allergens such as pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold, bacteria, viruses. They do it so your lungs don't have to. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Go to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Kevin, and depending on the model, you'll receive up to 39% off or up to $300 off. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. So to get this special offer, go to airdoctorpro.com. Use promo code Kevin, airdoctorpro.com, promo code Kevin.
Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com.
Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin.
So before I press into what Rachel just shared, a call out to new sponsor of the Ziglar Show, HelloFresh. As most of you know, if you've been listening to the shows long, I am an avid foodie. HelloFresh delivers the freshest food catered to my family size and dietary desires right to my door. So we got our first box a couple weeks ago, and my wife was she's dramatically picky about how fresh, especially the veggies are, ingredients overall. So she gave a big thumbs up right off the way to how perfectly fresh the kale was, which she's real picky about. And I love the individual servings of each ingredient for that recipe. So HelloFresh currently offers customers a classic box or a veggie box. Now, we got the veggie box as we are primarily vegetarian. And they're soon going to be launching a family box, which will be great because we got a lot of folks in my crew. So customers can order 3, 4, or 5 different meals per week designed for either 2 or 4 people. New recipes are created every single week. So, you know, I'm the big family who's drastically short on time. However, we make a home-cooked meal and have a sit-down dinner 7 days a week. And we're masters at throwing together good food fast, but I often have two struggles. One is we often end up with the same meals and get a little bored with it. And two, just running out of the fresh ingredients, because we do. We want fresh ingredients and we run out. So it's constant trips to the store. It takes time to think of new items and then make sure we have the ingredients. Well, HelloFresh addresses both issues in grand fashion, convenience, and new recipes. And they advocate something I love, that food brings people together. And good food allows us to live long and live well. And great food lets us enjoy every bite of life. So whether you're a busy professional couple, a large family that runs at breakneck pace, or someone who simply wants to start cooking more, HelloFresh makes it easier, tastier, and healthier than ever to enjoy the experience of cooking new recipes and eating together at home. So important. From creating the recipes and planning the meals to grocery shopping and even delivering all the pre-measured ingredients, again, HelloFresh delivers right to your door so you can skip the grocery trip. So each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks. Short on time, like we mostly all are. Again, all delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. So you can get $35 off your first week of deliveries. Visit HelloFresh.com and enter Ziglar. All right, HelloFresh.com and enter Ziglar when you subscribe. Okay, well, so that, you know, I do want to push into some, because I hear you. I agree. I do teach my kids, you know, same thing. We talk about that, about comparison, especially in the aspect of being in this world, but not of this world, and what that looked like. That was our family church last Sunday, that topic. But I'll talk to us right here, sitting here. We're all in the public light to a degree. And from a marketing and business perspective, we do know people judge a book by its cover. That's a big issue. We talk about it. It comes up here on the Ziglar Show a lot. And we address that in a way of that you've got to deal with that. And you can kill a great message with a bad book cover, in essence. So with that perspective of status and respect, you know, job titles and physical accoutrements and the car you drive up on. I mean, it does matter. I mean, from a business standpoint, Tom and I were talking about this. If you're a realtor, you know, and you show up in a jalopy, somebody's going to question the value of your business acumen as opposed to if you drive up in a Cadillac. And so I look at that. We respect wealth so much, and we respect those things, that for somebody to say, no, I'm going to cut back, I'm not going to do that because it's wise, and we're saying here, and I think we would all agree with that. And yet it's just, as you know, it's a very real issue. And I was thinking about this as I read the book, Rachel, and thinking about, you know, talking about it with my kids. I've got older kids now. And, you know, when they are judged somewhat, sitting at the table, especially a business table, by the nice clothes, the watch, the iPhone 6, the straight pearly white teeth, it's difficult to say, no, I'm not going to do those things until, and realize that there's going to be some aspect of, gosh, I hate to use the word judgment, but you get the point. So in the teaching, how do you, what is your main strategy of combating this very real pressure and reality that we live in?
Well, being wise with money doesn't mean you have to be cheap and that you can't, you know, have nice things by any means. You know, I mean, you can still be a realtor and drive a six-year-old Lexus that's used and you buy it with cash versus going and buying the $60,000 new one. You take, you know, you let someone take the depreciation hit on the new Lexus. I mean, there's yeah. ways to go through life and still, you know, dress appropriately, hold yourself well, speak well. I mean, there's ways to do that and still be wise with money. And so what I'm saying is the outpouring of the average family owing $16,000 in their credit card debt. You can't afford it. You can't afford the car that has a $492 car payment every month. Like, you can't afford that. And so there has to be a grown up and a maturity about you that says, you know what, I can't afford that, so I'm not going to buy that. Can I still have a great life and still enjoy things? Yeah, 100%. But there has to be boundaries and there has to be limits. And if you depend on what other people are saying and they're dictating your decisions, then you have the wrong perspective and you're going to end up broke because that's what many Americans do. So I would say, yes, you want to be, I mean, mom and dad, you know, people may think that they sent me like secret checks in the mail as an adult and like help support me. But no, I started off like everyone else. And my husband and I, we got married and we were young. We didn't have a ton of money. And so we had a budget, we had to be good, but I still feel like we still had a great life. And I still held myself well in the business world. And I still could present myself well, without having to have the Rolex watch. Do you know what I mean? I think, and I think people put that pressure on themselves that isn't always realistically there. And that's the problem.
Yeah, you remind me. I mean, it's something in the past year. I'm 45 years old, and in the past year, my wife actually had to say to me, because I think I took some of this too far, and I'm a cheapskate. And she said, honey, we're not paupers. We're at that running race, and you look like a bum. Please go buy some clothes. And there's some of that where I'm still, you know, there's the good and bad, I guess, where you can go too far and have balance. Okay. No, that makes sense a lot. I think that's going to be helpful to a lot of people to hear. You mentioned a minute ago, gratitude. So I was stalking your Facebook page, and getting ready for this. And I saw you had a gratitude challenge. Talk to us about how that's a primary tool to battle this spending issue.
Yeah, well, I found in my own life that gratitude, which is a huge word and can encompass so much. But for me, in a heart that's filled with gratitude, there is no room for comparisons and discontentment. And so for my life, that's where I've rooted myself is learning to be grateful. And every morning, too, I used to just grab my phone and my phone alarm would turn off and I would go and I'd scroll through Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and text messages and emails. And my phone would be in my face before my feet even hit the ground. And I realized about a year ago, I was like, what am I doing? I'm already immersing myself into someone else's world before I even started my own. And so I started a gratitude list. And so every morning I just type down two things on my phone, in my iPhone's app that I'm grateful for. And there in my notes app is a running list of my gratitude. And so when I feel that comparison creep up in me, you know, from all different angles, whether it's marriage or parenting or job, whatever it is, you know, I really do. I think, gosh, I go back to that list and now there's so many things. And for me, that helps because it just helps me stop to say, okay, this is everything God has given me. Like I have so much to be grateful for. And really for me, that allows me to rest and be content and helps me quit comparing my life to that person's. And so gratitude just, I think it does so much in our lives, including with our money. Cause when you're grateful, it's easier to be content. And when you're content, you're able to save more. You're able to give more. You're able to sacrifice your lifestyle to get out of debt. You're able to do these things with your money. When you're not content, you're running and gunning and you think the next thing is going to make you happy or the next thing is going to be that thing to make you, you know, and it doesn't. And so, you know, godliness with contentment is great gain, scripture says, and I believe that wholeheartedly. And so, gratitude is huge. And so the challenge, yeah, that you were talking about, I launched just first on social. I just said, hey, post a picture every day. And, you know, for a lot of social, it's hashtag blessed, which is usually like, you know, the really best parts of our life. It's like, oh, look what my husband, he just brought me breakfast in bed, hashtag blessed, or, you know, first class airline seats, blessed, you know, it's like, everything's like that blessed. And I was like, no, find something in your life, everyday things that you're grateful for. And instead of hashtag blessed, do hashtag actually blessed. So that's the running seven day challenge to everyone. And so it's been fun to be able to do. And again, just practicing that gratitude on a daily basis is huge for you emotionally, but also financially.
Well, Rachel, that speaks a lot to me. I think it was probably been a couple years ago, and I am failing to recall the name of the book. It's by Ann Voskamp, and it was something my wife read, and she started a daily gratitude journal for our family. And it was like 1,000 things, and we just all took turns doing it, and it was significant. It really was. I mean, it's one of those exercises that you hear about, but when you really hunker down and do it, it is, but in this reference of to do it in regards to spending, feels like a great exercise to do when I'm tempted, you know?
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's usually where I end up going back to. It is that time where I'm like, oh man, I just don't feel strong enough, you know, or I'm like, gosh, like we need a vacation because four of our friends are on vacation right now. You know, you feel that creep up and you, I go back to that list for that reason. Exactly.
Yeah. I have to do that when I'm a sucker for a deal. So in Travelocity, I think this was yesterday, the day before, 24-hour sale. And I'm just looking, we got to go somewhere. And I'm so close to doing it. And thank goodness I got busy and went on and didn't spend whatever I was about to. But well, so right at the beginning of the book, and I know that I've got the book in front of me right now, Seven Money Habits, but you start the book off with that, with a key Ziglar trait topic that we talk about so often, which is just habit. And before you know, even talk about the social aspect that before you get into that in the book, the social aspect and pressures that we talk about, you just drill into habit. And, you know, I know your dad started teaching on money 25 years ago, but how do you see the habits of today's culture? And I'd even ask from your own generation, which is a step behind my own, how do you see those habits as being different? Are they the same, or have they changed and morphed to some degree? Before Rachel addresses my question on habit, I want to thank Braintree for their support of this episode of The Ziglar Show. If you run a business, or many like I do, I bet you remember the first dollar that you made. Now you want to grow to make your millionth or billionth. Have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? It's a big deal. Well, Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one integration, and it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them, which I appreciate for the Ziglar Show here. We span the globe and have people from all over listening, so this matters to you. To learn more about how your company can grow with Braintree, visit BraintreePayments.com/Ziglar. Again, that's BraintreePayments.com/Ziglar.
Yeah, I think they definitely change and morph. I mean, I think the foundational principles could probably live on generation to generation, but the way we do and handle our money today is different. I mean, online banking, I mean, having apps, I mean, the convenience aspect of money is much greater than it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So like writing a check today for most millennials is completely foreign, you know, like people just don't do it anymore. Yeah. And so that kind of way, the way we interact with money, I think has changed the most. And there's pros and cons to it all. I mean, I think convenience is key. And if you're able to have your bills on auto draft to make sure you're not late, do it. I mean, you know, I think there's definitely advantages, but I think we've taken a step away from the actual tangible money that we hold in our hands. And I think that can affect our spending. Studies have shown that when you spend with cash, you actually spend less than if you spend on a credit card. And so really, you know, that kind of thing has moved away. And now, you know, with Apple Pay, even on your phone, you just swipe your phone. I mean, you know, we're definitely taking the emotion out of money and making it so much easier to purchase, which I think can lead to a lot of overspending, which I'm guilty of. I mean, Amazon Prime, it's like, okay, everything could be at our house in 2 days, you know, and it's just like, you seem to rack up everything. And so, yeah, just being very, very careful with the technology when it is a blessing. But sometimes with the budget, it can hurt it.
I hadn't thought about that again. And I remember that teaching of, it feels so much more difficult to hand over cash, of which I often have none. I have zero, you know, and I've gotten used to now I go into Starbucks. I don't even bring my wallet because I have it on my phone. It automatically re-ups my thing. And of course, they're always bribing me to spend more. So I'm a gold member and I get my rewards. And Yeah, it's so darn easy. And I do like the convenience. Yeah, Amazon Prime, I wear it out. I don't have to go to the store. It's here 2 days, no shipping. And in a lot of ways, it's a great convenience, a great efficiency. But you're right, the pain of spending, I don't really realize until if I take the time to go into the bank account and look through there and then start questioning where the outgoes came from, that are my wife or the kids, and say, oh my goodness, where is the money going? That is, you're right. That's huge for today, and a much different place than when your dad started some of this messaging. Well, so on that note, I wanted to ask you that, where do you see, just from a, I know you talked about debt and we're talking about some of those spendings, but from a literal tangible place of where do you see the culture today wasting money the most? And I'm asking literal, I'm curious, is it food? Is it electronics? Is it entertainment? Is it, where are we most prone to just make that instantaneous decision and blow money?
Well, I think out of the needs of our life, so that being food, shelter and utilities, clothes, transportation, these are things that we do need to survive today, right? To get around and to do life. And so for a lot of people, they take that to the grand extent, you know, going, you know, I'm a girl, so I'm going to like the spa day, for instance. You know, we go to a spa day, that feels like a splurge, that feels out of routine, that feels like, oh, should I do that? Like, I mean, there's a lot of questioning, but oh, let's just go to a nice dinner tonight. I mean, we have to eat anyways. It's the needs that become magnified, where yes, you need food and you need to eat, but it's so quick to go and have a glass of wine, have an appetizer, get the meal, get another glass of wine, we'll have a dessert, you know, and suddenly that restaurant bill just builds and builds and builds. Now, if it's in your budget and you have the money for it, then you choose to do that. That's great. But a lot of people overspend in food and within the needs category, they magnify those and justify that because they need it, but you don't need that nice steak dinner every night. So food, though, for most people, busts the budget. And a lot of, you know, people that do grocery shopping or they go out to eat, I mean, food is always the connecting point of people where they overspend.
Okay, so, I mean, I almost, when I think about that, because I would say, oh my gosh, that's, yeah, I am. I think one of my favorite hobbies is just grocery shopping. Love food, love cooking it, love making it. And we have people over pretty much every night. And I am one of those people that I stress if there's not enough food. So we're going to have an overabundance always. And yeah, so can we categorize that somewhat in just pleasures?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and again, if you know your food budget's going to be bigger because you host and you do things, then make it bigger. You know, I'm not saying not to spend and to do those things, but that means you'll probably have to say no to other things, if you will. So I'm with you, though. I mean, that's one of my favorite things, going out to eat. I think because we never went out to eat as kids. I mean, we always ate at home. We never went out to eat. So for me, even to this day, I'm like, oh, let's go out to eat. It's still like this treat for me. And I love it, but gosh, it can become so expensive. But again, if it's in the budget, I'm Debbie Downer, I know. I always look back to the budget, but if it's there, then spend it and enjoy. But the overspending is real.
Okay, so in this, again, from a big picture standpoint, in your work here and in your messaging, and I know you're often talking to people who have come to you with that desire, so they have an aspiration, I would say. But when it comes down to, okay, yeah, people can hear it and people can hear it, but when do they change? My question to you is, where do you see that primary pain point or trigger, or just when do they ultimately get the motivation? I mean, is there an event that happens or a timeline or I don't know. That's what I want to ask you, that you see that it's at this point that it finally gets to people where they then say, okay, I've been hearing this message, I know better, I'm going to strap down and do it.
Well, I think it's different for everyone. I mean, I talked about, you know, the 26-year-old couple that pay off your house. I'm like, you know, there's 46-year-olds that don't even have that goal. You know what I mean? But for that couple, for whatever reason, it hit them and that's what they wanted. So I think, you know, personal conviction comes into play. But I think people, when they get to the point in their own life, and again, you could be 26, you could be 56, but the point where you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, and this feeling of, I drive to work, I sit in traffic, I deal with a jerky boss, I'm exhausted, and all I'm doing is paying MasterCard and the two car payments in the driveway, and I don't want to do this anymore. But people have to get to that point in their life where they say, I'm willing to change. And I think everyone, you know, most people realize that they don't like change, and changing is hard. But to say, okay, if I want a different result from what I've been doing, I have to change what I've been doing, because doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. And so people, they have to get to that point. But, you know, I meet 56-year-olds who are okay with it, and they're okay with living paycheck to paycheck and just living on the credit card debt, and they're fine with it. So, you know, I think Dad always laughs, and he always says him and Jenny Craig will be in business forever because there's people, you know, they don't want to change their diet. So whatever it is, I mean, they do have to get to a point in their own life. And so I think it's different for everyone.
So I got a question on that. One of the quotes that I'm basing a new book around it is the fastest way to success is to replace bad habits with good habits. And I talk about termite-sized habits, like little tiny habits. And you add up a bunch of these little tiny bad habits and you get rid of them. And you replace them with little tiny good habits. And at the end of the year, if you do that once a week, you got a brand new life. What are three kind of small bad habits that people make, you know, unconsciously, financially every day? And how could they take that little change and then put that into a good habit?
Can I piggyback on that real quick? Because as soon as you brought that up, I know you use that analogy, Tom, the termites that get more or the earthquakes and the big destructive things get all the press, but it's the termites that do more damage statistically, you know, to homes and lives. And yeah, Rachel, when I think about that, I mean, I'm quick to put off a big expenditure. We're going to spend that much on a car or go buy that or do that vacation. But it's the little stuff. Do you see, I'm going to add to his question too. Is that generally where you see the biggest erosion of finances is from those little expenditures that go unseen or unnoticed or unintentional, I guess, as opposed to people making a big decision on a big expense?
Sure. I mean, I think both. I think, you know, people make $60,000 mistakes on the car lot, you know, and that affects them for years to come. But also it's those, you know, Starbucks drive-through four times a week and you don't realize you're $5-ing yourself to death, or you walk into Target or Costco and it's like, oh, I'll just, you know, drop an extra $100. And you do that once a week, that's $400 a week. You know what I mean? Like it grows and grows and grows. So there's definitely the spending without even thinking, the spontaneous spending, the impulse spending, that is one issue. But I think the three, to answer your question, Tom, you know, three things that came to mind, just off the top of my head, I'm like, one habit is people don't check their checking account at all. For most people, I could ask, you know, what's even your login information for your online bank? And they don't even know. I mean, people just don't check, and they sometimes go into overdraft and they have to pay those fees, and they don't check. They don't stay up on it. And I'm not saying you have to be so militant, especially if you're married. My husband, Winston, he's on top of it. I mean, he checks it probably once a day, or I maybe like once a week. So I'm a little bit more lax knowing that he kind of has it going. But I don't think people know what they have. And it's amazing. Even talking to people, some people can't even tell me how much they make a month after taxes. Like how much actually goes into your checking account. Most people are like, I don't really, you know, they just don't know. And so that's one thing I'd say. Number two, the habit of the credit card. I mean, people, that's the only primary way people pay for stuff, and they pay off their bill every month, or some say they do. Statistically speaking, they don't. But you know, that's the means to an end of how they do life. And I think that is a bad habit, depending on the bank, and to, you know, have to owe Visa, because ultimately you're not living out the front windshield, you're living through the rearview mirror. You're paying for food you've already eaten, movies you've already seen, clothes you've already worn, versus planning ahead and using your own money. So I do see a credit card as the bad habit. And also a habit of with your spouse, if you're married, not talking about money. And this is a habit that can really wedge between a marriage, because it can seem so small and insignificant, you know, day after day, but then it turns into weeks, it turns into months, and some people even years. And they end up doing marriage on two completely tracks financially, even to the point of having two checking accounts, and they just don't communicate about money, and they live like this. And that becomes a very dangerous habit, considering one of the leading causes of divorce in America today is money fights and money problems. And so it really does become a huge issue in marriage, but it's that dangerous termite habit of just, oh, well, I bought this, but I'm just not going to tell my husband. I'm going to hide the Target bag. Or, you know, you go to the grocery store. I heard a girl say this to me, and I was like, ooh. And they get asked for cash back on a debit card. And she's like, oh, I took out $100. I just didn't tell him. And I'm like, you know, red flag, flashing lights. It doesn't seem like a big deal at the time, but suddenly what are you doing? It's that hiding and that going around each spouse that starts to could really, really damage a relationship.
Wow. I love it. So three quick things. Just check your checking account a couple of times a week and know how much money you're putting in every month. Know where you are. You know, we say the old GPS is, if you're going to go to where you want to go, you got to know where you're starting from.
Yes.
It's great. It's such a simple thing. The credit card trap. Use cash. I love the envelope system and what you guys teach there. And it's so simple. It's so visible, and the psychology around that goes on forever. But I can tell you, my wife and I, she's fantastic with money. I mean, she's like every guy's dream. She knows where it all is, and she's reasonable, and you know, we do all those things. But just taking a walk with your spouse once a week and talking about money, where you want to go, what it's for. I kind of borrowed a couple of quotes. I put a couple of things together. I think I texted your dad this, but I said, you know, because your dad says every dollar has to have a name. And I say every minute has to have a purpose. So every dollar has a name. Every minute has a purpose. And that's just a great guideline. If, you know, if the minute that you spent with the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with, if you just had a purpose of having a financial discussion once a week, wow, that would just be huge. And so that's for our audience. I love that, because these are little tiny things. Literally checking your bank account, what, 60 seconds?
Absolutely. Easy. Knowing yes.
Knowing what the deposit is, I mean, 60 seconds. A 5-minute conversation once a week about money with your spouse, that's nothing. But, you know, that'll save months of arguing and missed sleep later on down the road. These are all little bad habits for little good habits. So I love it. Thank you for that.
Well, that's great.
And I'm curious on that in marriage. I mean, so that's that stat that you said, so many divorces, I don't know if you said a lot of them, or even the majority are have financial issues at the head of those. What is it though? Is it disagreements, or just non-communication, or, you know, guilt within the spending? Where does the issue manifest itself within a marriage generally?
Yeah, I think it's all over the map, honestly. I mean, for a lot of spouses, they just can't get on the same page. And ultimately, when you can't get on the same page with money, you know, whether it's, oh, well, I want to get out of debt, but my husband doesn't want to, or God, my wife just spends everything and I can't get her out. You know, I can't seem to like rein her in. And she tells me that she doesn't want to be on a budget. You know, I hear that conflict a lot. And for most couples, I hope, you know, they can resolve it and walk through it and get on that same page. But ultimately what's happening is that you're not just not agreeing on your money. You're not agreeing on your goals in life and where you want to go, your dreams, your fears, kind of like what Tom was just saying. And ultimately, what money reveals is a part of your value system of who you are. And when you can't agree on that, what ends up happening is just this, day in and day out. And so it does take a toll. And so ultimately, it may not be the dollars and cents at the end of the day that the divorce papers are filed, but it's the deeper of the woman feeling insecure, or the man feeling like, you know, she just nags him all the time, or that she won't get on plan. He wants to, you know, it's ultimately what ends up happening is we don't have the same value system of who we are as people. And money is just that magnifying glass.
Okay. This is a mean question. I shouldn't even ask it, but my curiosity is getting the better of me. And I'm a big enough guy in my own manhood to take the bad answer, but generally, who's the worst spender?
When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is, we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet, it's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a 5-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages, all designed to keep your body in a fasting state while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer.
I'll be really honest. It does not gender. It's not specific. I mean, it's amazing. I hear both sides pretty equally. And you would think women, I think some people assume, oh, well, women, because they like to shop, they like to do that. But not really. For a lot of women, they actually want the savings. They want that security and that stability. Mm-hmm. But all that to say, I mean, it's both. I mean, and within my family, my sister's a saver. I'm a spender. My mom's a saver. My husband's the saver. My dad's the spender. I can go through all these couples in my mind, and it's either or. So it depends on the couple.
Okay. How about
I wish I had a fun answer.
I was just curious. How about personality style? I think if I'm correct in our father's dealings together, I think you guys do some of the DISC work, the personality profile stuff.
Yes,
how about
yes.
that? Is there anything in that where you look DISC and these people, you know, because I would guess, well, gosh, okay, the eyes are the outgoing, the maybe the spontaneous. Can we give some personality attributes to spending?
I would think so for sure. I don't have like a scientific study. I should do that. That's kind of smart. I never really thought about that, but I would assume the D's and I's are probably spenders because D's make quick decisions. They know what they want. They'll just get it. I's are kind of the life of the party, like you said. So, you know, like you, I relate to you where you're like, oh, we host people. I'm like, oh, that's so fun. Let's just go and get some fun stuff for the party tonight, you know? Yeah. And then S is, I think, a little bit more cautious. C's are so analytical that they probably couldn't imagine, you know, going above $100 and spending, you know, without it being in the budget kind of thing. So yeah, I would definitely think personality drives it for sure.
It's interesting to think about, even with my wife, she's more prone to probably, you know, spend $300 over the week on this and that and this and that. And I won't. And then it'll be one thing and boom, it's gone. Interesting thing. Okay. Well, another aspect of what you talked about, you mentioned this a couple of times in regards to, I think, college and career and people who are going to work at a place that they may not enjoy what they do, but they're strapped to it because they have bills to pay. So I know from a college standpoint, we talk about that how many kids are going to school, getting their student loans. They come out, they just got to get a job. The pressure's on because they've got loans to pay back. So I'm asking an overall question. How much of a factor is career in this money issue? Again, in regards to what you said, people are working and feel stuck in a career. Or maybe I should rephrase it. How many would feel more free to go after work that they actually do like, work you love, like my dad talks about, if they did not have those financial shackles holding them back?
Oh, I think it would change tremendously, because what debt ends up happening is debt steals your choices. And when scripture says the borrower is slave to the lender, it's true. You are a slave, financially speaking. You don't have options. You don't have choices. And so that stability of that paycheck, knowing that you have to have money coming in, and the thought of even quitting a job and not knowing where money's going to come in, you're going to get behind on your bills. You don't have that option to go and do that. Where if you didn't have payments and you had 3 to 6 months of expenses saved in the bank and you planned ahead of time and said, okay, I'm going to take 3 months and start this thing and I have the cash for it, suddenly your risk goes down. I mean, there's so many factors in that. And so I think a lot of people, are in a job that they don't care for, but it pays the bills, and that's where they're at in that point in life. And I think through the process of getting out of debt, there's some sacrifice of working jobs you hate, you know, delivering pizzas, working extra, working overtime, doing things you don't like to do, making that short-term sacrifice for the long-term gain of being debt-free. But this cycle of people working 40 hours or, you know, 40 hours a week for 40 years, and they just do it to pay the bills, I mean, I think that's very normal. But suddenly when you don't have any payments and the boss comes in yelling at you, you have the option to walk away. You know, you have the option to be able to say, you know what, I don't owe anyone anything. I don't have to be here. And so that freedom does come with it. And so, yeah, there's power in being debt-free and to have choices and options again in your life.
I love that. Debt steals your choices. Mm-hmm. That's tweetable. That's quotable. Yeah. Write that down. And we all want choices.
I'm writing it down.
You know, one of the things I teach all the time is you've got to have a big why, a compelling reason, a legacy you want to leave, you know, this dream that you want to accomplish, this thing that is constantly drawing you towards it. Otherwise, it's easy to self-medicate, you know, to do retail therapy, to do all the things that we like to do to just give us that lift in the meantime. What's your advice for somebody who, you know, they're feeling the pressure financially, it's not good. They know that they're, you know, one layoff away from disaster, and they just don't have this capacity to think of the why, you know, the big reason. How do you tell somebody who's in that kind of that despair mode, hey, dig in, you can do it, you know, create a dream of where you want to go? What is the first, you know, what's your advice to them?
I would say for a lot of people, you have to take self-responsibility. into check. And you have to be able to say, you know, I can't blame others for how I've gotten here. I've made these choices. This is what I've done. And that self, and sure, have people, you know, done hurtful things to you along the way? Probably. I mean, that is life. And so, but to take that responsibility on yourself to say, okay, I'm the only one that can change my life. You know, Hillary's not going to do it. Trump's not going to do it. You know, like, I can't depend on the government to do it. Like, you really is you. And to be able to get to that point in your life where you say, okay, I have decisions that I have to make. And, you know, especially if you have a family, I mean, looking at your kids and saying, gosh, you know, what kind of legacy are you leaving them? And I'm thankful my parents really got to that point. And it was through bankruptcy and through a lot of hard times. But if it wasn't for them to put a line in the sand and say, no matter what, we're not borrowing money. No matter what, we're changing the way we handle money. No matter what, my kids are not going to feel this pain. And because of those choices and turning their lives around, that was the legacy and that was the example set for me. And knowing that I don't have to make devastating mistakes with my money like they did. I can still learn to handle money wisely, you know, by that example and understanding, taking that knowledge and that practice into my own life. And so for people that, you know, feel like, gosh, I don't know what else to do. You know, I think that first step is to say, you know, you're the only one that can change your life. And either you have the decision to do it or not. And it's up to you. But I think looking at your kids and looking at your family, your community, knowing what impact you could leave, is a motivating one for me, again, because of the legacy that was passed to me. It's contagious, in my opinion. I mean, I feel like, gosh, there's no way you can't do that.
I love it. That sounds so much like Zig Ziglar. Dad would say this. He would ask an individual who's in that state, he would say, is there anything you can do right now that would make your life worse? And of course, we can all think of 100 things.
Yeah.
And then he would say, okay, is there anything you can do that would make your life better right now? Could you drink a cold glass of water? Could you get 5 minutes of exercise? Could you text somebody you love and tell them how much you appreciate them? All those little things will make your life better. And so what happens is a transaction between the ears that says, I have the power to make things better or worse, and the choice is mine. And so what you just said about responsibility of looking at your situation going, you know what? I don't like where I am, but I can make a decision now and every day going forward to make things better. I love that.
Yep, me too. Well, hey, Rachel, I have one more question. You know, the Ziglar audience is such a wide array of people. We've got people at very differing socioeconomic levels. And I know on one hand, spending is spending, money is money, and the issues that we deal with are across the board. But are there any different pressures that you see amongst someone who's making 35 grand a year or 95? I mean, that's a big difference there. And then, you know, keep going. You can go up as high as you want. But even in the $200,000 a year levels, I mean, it's a different, very different lifestyle. But do you see different pressures, different things that they have to address, different viewpoints that they have to understand regarding those, or is it just across the board?
Well, I think the ultimate principles of being on the same page with your spouse, steering clear of debt, making a plan for your money, quitting the comparisons, all of those principles, I think, line up whether you make 30 grand or 3 million a year. So I think those, but the way those manifest, I think, are different. So I think, you know, the people that are in the higher economic level, you know, their friends, you know, probably are around that same way, and they're probably going on fancier trips and it's, you know, bigger and better. But the middle class, you know, lower class, you know, making $30,000 a year, I mean, they may look up and say, oh, wow, our friends, you know, they went to Disney World for the first time and we need to get to Disney World. You know, it may not be the biggest grand vacation in the world. I mean, Disney's actually pretty nice. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's pretty expensive. So yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like the way it manifests it, the magnification of it may be different, but the principles definitely are the same. That foundation is key no matter what you're making. But there will be different pressures, different issues possibly that they deal with. But man, those principles line up no matter who you are.
Yeah. Rachel, thank you for bringing this here. It was felt refreshing to see the book. I see so many, especially in prep for these shows, and yours was just, it resonated. I like the simplicity of it. And yeah, the fact that it speaks to Well, I want to talk with my kids again because there's things in there I never really thought of. Of course, I'm aware of social media and I think how it's changed our culture, but I didn't think about the financial aspect. Even what you talked about today, as far as the even further lack of cash in our hands, and yeah, the Starbucks app where you just, you know, shine it in front of there and it zaps it and you don't give it a second thought. Is a big deal. And I love people to be free. I love myself to be free. And you're talking about one of the primary places we imprison ourselves. So thank you for this book, for your message, for taking the time with us today. Folks, again, go get the book, Love Your Life, Not Theirs. Now you can find it. Well, just type it in. You'll find it everywhere. Go to Rachel's website that we gave you in the intro. And thank you. We'll probably have to do this again if you're willing.
Absolutely. Well, thanks you guys for having me on. I so appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, folks, thanks. It's an honor to be here inspiring our true performance together. We'll talk with you in the next Ziglar Show.